Welcome to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's New Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe and please rate and review the program. As a programming note, we have obviously moved from the afternoon to the morning. Our new time slot is 11 to 12, so check us out daily there. I've been your host, Will Liu. I'm joined by co-host Blake Murphy. What's going on, Blake?
A lot. Apparently.
A lot is going on, yeah.
Yeah, quite the news cycle before yesterday's game. You know, it means we don't have to talk as much about a 96-88 loss where neither team even shot 25% on threes. It was the closest thing to the media game that that the public will get to see. Ugly game, ugly day in terms of the reporting around the Toronto Raptors as well with DeJounte Porter allegations.
Yeah, we'll talk about those first and foremost. And also joining us in studio, friend of the program, Big V, Vivek Jacob. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. Always here for the serious topics. That's why you brought me in, right?
I was just reading your piece on Raptors and Seven about what the Raptors should do with Gary Trent Jr. in the offseason, and I actually wanted to have that discussion with you. Obviously, a bigger story emerged, so we'll get to that in segment two. The big story that everyone's talking about right now in the NBA, improbably, is DeJounte Porter, which obviously it is not about his play. It's actually about the lack thereof of his play, because the NBA is investigating betting irregularities, particularly for two games via DraftKings involving Toronto Raptors forward DeJounte Porter. You've already heard the story by now. It was broken on ESPN. DeJounte obviously has been out for the last two games, listed out with personal reasons, but I think we know what those personal reasons are right now. And yeah, I just wanted to get your general thoughts, because for me, being down in the arena last night, seeing this story break in real time, it broke around 5:30-ish, which is usually when everyone's just kind of mingling around in the tunnels of the Scotiabank Arena. Seeing that news break in real time and seeing people sort of like run around and scramble and just sort of figure out what's going on was quite the experience. But I wanted to get your thoughts, Blake, on you know, the allegations around DeJounte Porter.
Yeah, I mean, foremost, it felt like something like this was bound to happen eventually in the NBA. We've seen on the NFL side, Calvin Ridley suspended for the entire 2022 season for placing parlays not on his team while he was on the injured list. Last year, an additional 10 NFL players were suspended over the course of the 2023 calendar year, to where at the end of the season, the NFL had to rework its gambling policy and make it more strict on players betting on NFL action, harsher automatic punishments and things like that. Of course, the main sports news cycle outside of March Madness this last week or so has also been Shohei Ohtani and the accusations against his interpreter, whether that's for the gambling side of that, for the theft from Shohei Ohtani to cover the gambling losses. And the reality of this is, as sports betting becomes kind of more and more omnipresent around sports and sports culture, it felt like something like this was probably going to happen eventually. Unfortunately, the league and the players union for decades, honestly, well before sports betting was legal in some states or legal in Canada, have been trying to educate players about this. There's obviously the Tim Donaghy scandal from a decade back or so, but the NBA and NBPA have tried to be on top of this for a very, very long time, because sports betting has existed and the incentives or risks to have guys do this have existed long before this stuff was legal and omnipresent. But that kind of heavy presence obviously makes it more front of mind, more accessible and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that's one thought on this. The second is that this is incredibly disappointing. It would be an incredibly disappointing error in judgment if this is true, by the way. We should say there are right now, they're investigating the betting irregularities. DeJounte Porter is being held out of action while that goes on. But there is nothing to say at this point in the process that DeJounte placed those bets or XYZ happened. So this is all just alleged right now. If what is alleged is true and it traces back to DeJounte not only having, you know, a lot, whether placing the bets themselves or enticing other people to bet, and the implication here being that, you know, he knowingly pulled himself out of games and hit his unders, that would be any sort of gambling that violates the league and union agreed upon rules would be a really disappointing error in judgment. Betting on yourself, on your own team, while you could understand it, would be a very disappointing error in judgment. But what is implied here true and will be alleged here is that you knowingly bet against yourself and withdrew your performance from the team. So again, it's not, nobody is yet to say that, hey, Jonte bet on this and intentionally did this. It could be something, you know, there are other explanations, though they feel less plausible with the information that we have right now. Regardless, this is incredibly disappointing for the league, for the team, for Jonte Porter, if what is alleged can be traced back to his actions and him having knowledge of that. It's just a huge error in judgment. You could even get into the risk reward part of it. Like, obviously ethically it's really bad, but also like your judgment in terms of what the future of your career looks like versus what you're making off of this. There's no way around how disappointing this is. And unfortunately how kind of inevitable it has felt, not necessarily with Jonte, but as this stuff kind of continues to pick up steam around sports.
Okay, Vivek, what was your reaction when you saw this break last night?
It's just sad. You know, when you think of the disappointing factor, you think of the way that, you know, he's worked his way back into the league and the things that he's been through injury-wise, and just to have this opportunity again to potentially throw it away. Again, we don't know what's going to come of the investigation. I think it would just be a sad way for things to play out after, you know, you think about all the things that have gone wrong for the Raptors this season. Among the few things that have gone right is this Jonte Porter feel-good story. Mm-hmm. And so if it were to end this way, it would be extremely disappointing. For me, I think whichever way this plays out, the NBA has to recognize its part in this. Mm-hmm. And the possibility of this. And I think they have to take serious measures. You ask about, you know, what are some of the first things I thought about? You know, I was a kid watching cricket, and there was a huge match fixing scandal that broke out in the early 2000s.
Okay.
And there were big players involved who got banned for life. Mm. One was the captain of the Indian cricket team. Like, we were talking about big players.
Right, of course.
I don't think there'll be that necessarily to worry about because cricketers weren't making as much money at the time. Mm-hmm. And here, the best players in the league are very well taken care of.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think they'll be carried away with bookies and things like that. But I think especially the second round picks, especially guys on 10-day contracts, those are the ones that, you know, bookies will be circling like sharks. And they'll be saying, okay, can we get in with any of these guys and try to work our way in? And I think that's where you have to be careful. Mm-hmm. Cricket, once that broke out, they created an entire anti-corruption team to make sure none of this happens again.
Right.
And so I think the NBA has to be very serious in terms of mitigating this stuff completely, you know, doing whatever they can to keep these players out of the loop.
Yeah, I think if we go big picture on this, right, if you as a league decide to go into partnering directly with sportsbooks in this case, and the NBA has done this on pretty much every single level.
And more is coming.
And more
is
coming.
With the League Pass integration.
Right. First off, this isn't unique. I mean, sports gambling is kind of a fact of life, and it's going to continue to be so. And, of course, when you do directly partner with them, though, like, that's where you need to make sure that, above all else, the integrity of your sport is the core of your business. And no matter what kind of partnership you go into, there needs to be a very heavy consideration, as you mentioned, that you actually maintain and protect that. Because I think on the bigger picture, that's what's really the difficulty for the NBA is, are you able to maintain your integrity as a sport? And of course, this is something that happened on a very small scale. Whether Jonte Porter left games intentionally to hit the unders for some prop bets, which honestly is... risk reward wise, it's like $1,000 or $2,000 for a prop bet versus like you make $400,000 for your salary. I don't think anyone would, you know, sensibly wager in that kind of fashion without it being just characterized as a very, very big miscalculation and just very stupid in general. Again, that's what's alleged to have happened. But in any case, the league itself needs to make sure that you do not compromise your integrity and the trust in your product. First and foremost.
And look, the NBA would tell you that they are doing that. And DraftKings has already issued a statement via a spokesman yesterday that, and look, what I'm about to say, like, you can roll your eyes at it and there is maybe a level of naivete to it, But, you know, DraftKings says that actually this is one of the benefits of regulating sports betting.
Okay.
Is that you can catch irregularities like this, where if it is only illicit markets, you know, Shohei's translator, for example, the way that they have stumbled upon that is, well, the California government was investigating an illegal bookmaker and then saw all these wire transfers. It wasn't, there's a $500,000 bet being made on this thing and it raises a flag. So DraftKings has come out and said via spokesman, actually, this is the system working. The NBA has, for years, but certainly more so in recent years, as this all becomes legal in more states, have data scientists who are on top of it. Like there is a, they don't call it this, but basically an integrity team. Mm-hmm. And every team is supposed to have representatives who have an eye out for that stuff as well. And obviously in the era of big data, and you know, if league partners are filtered, like ESPN got this story in part because they are a DraftKings partner. So when DraftKings sees these irregularities, you know, they can raise the flag to ESPN.
That the story was brought to you by DraftKings, by the way.
Yeah.
There's no irony in this.
And look, there is a thick irony. And, you know, if you want to be more critical, hypocrisy to a lot of the reporting that'll go, like we have betting sponsors on Sportsnet. Everyone does around sports media. Anyway, so DraftKings would tell you, the league would tell you, other betting sites would tell you, actually the regulation helps because we can catch stuff like this. Now, whether you believe that, whether you think that outweighs the kind of extra illicit incentives for players because it is so big, there is so much money, it is so kind of ubiquitous, you know, that's for you to make the judgment. But the league and these places will stand by, hey, actually, this is the system working. We can catch this stuff. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, the data systems to raise these red flags and look at them a little more closely. So the leagues are trying. It just, I don't know that you're ever going to keep up with the kind of ingenuity of bad actors.
Yeah, in this case, ingenuity is too generous because if the scheme is what it seems to be, pattern is what it seems to be.
You did not cover that up.
How is, like, come on, man. This is like, who in the right mind is even betting on Jante Porter unders? You know what I mean? Like no, for real. Like,
look, as someone who has bemoaned the fact in the past that I can't bet on G League games, probably me, but not to that level, right? Like,
but seriously, though, and for that to be the number one money-making play on
twice.
Two separate incidents where he left the game, it's like you can definitely see not just how a very sophisticated data team could find this. I think anyone looking at this would be
connect
like,
the dots. It's like,
what are you doing here? Which, again, like, you know, it's not like you can bet an infinite amount of money on the prop bets. Like, it's like 1 or 2,000 on a prop like this. I think there was the reporting that that Woj passed along that, like, there were certain bets that people wanted to make 10 or even 20K bets on this. How is not that, like, the biggest red flag of, like, who is that confident on Jante Porter hitting an under 0.5 on threes? Like, come on, man.
And that's part of it. And then the lower limits, and yes, usually it's 1 to 2,000 on an individual player prop. Those vary a little bit by site by the prop specifically. You know, DraftKings, who again, are the ones who first flag this.
Yeah.
They say on their site there's a $20,000 cap on player props in general and specials. So that's like at the absolute max, but I think that's like spread out over a lot. And then, yeah, you can parlay some of these things together to make it bigger. We have had one other anonymous sports book report to ESPN that, yeah, we saw this activity too. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about the small limits, you're now talking about, for this to be even remotely worthwhile and worth the risk, you know, is there a system of, hey, multiple people over multiple accounts over multiple sites? I think that's probably what they're looking into now to see exactly what the scope of this is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, and this is not a question that you guys can really answer, but one of the questions I had for this and something I'm looking forward to finding out the answer to was Jante acting alone, right? Were there people that he was directing on this? You know, honestly, was there a coordination beyond Jante as well, which, again, I this is all complete just questions. Like, that's questions that I just want to have. You know what I mean? And I guess the other thing is, what kind of punishment could come out of something like this? Because, obviously, it is strictly prohibited for NBA players to, you know, and again, right now we don't even know if he specifically bet on his own performances. Hopefully he didn't. I mean, that would be even, you know, more ridiculous and quite frankly stupid. But,
yeah, just quickly, for people who don't know.
Yeah.
NBA players cannot gamble on anything that's NBA, WNBA, or G League.
Right.
Or Summer League. Yeah, stuff like eSports, you're not allowed to bet on as well, just because.
Sure, yeah. Anything under the NBA umbrella.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the punishment for something like this?
So there isn't precedent in the NBA. There's no example of this. And even the precedents in other sports, you know, I mentioned earlier the NFL, Calvin Ridley got a whole season and he wasn't betting on his own team. He wasn't even playing. He was out injured. There were 10 suspensions during the NFL season last year. And the new NFL policy is it's an auto suspension. They made it more strict at the end of the season because they have these gambling policies and they're like, we suspended 10 guys for gambling this year. We got to make it more strict.
Sure.
It's an automatic, I believe it's an automatic 1 year and in some cases automatic 2 year, depending on what specifically you bet and whether your team is involved, whether you are involved. The NBA, as far as I know, has not publicly released their gambling policy and what the punishment scale is. There's no precedent for us to go on.
Yeah.
I would imagine they want to come down very hard, especially like you're going to want to come down hard for a lot of reasons. The integrity and ethics reason, the send a message reason, et cetera. But like extra so if this ends up being verified and Jonte had a hand in it, the fact that you were betting against yourself and against your your performance for your team is a little extra. So we'll see in that regard. The other thing, and to your point, V, about, you know, what is the scale of this? How many people were involved? Was there a system? Depending on the jurisdiction and what jurisdiction this would fall under, there are potential criminal punishments well. Tim Donaghy went to jail for 15 months. The Canadian Criminal Code has an entire section about influencing sports betting and things like that. You know, I'm not a lawyer, but in reading that stuff this morning, it certainly seems like, you know, if the jurisdiction were deemed to be Canada here and this was a larger scale thing, they might want to get in on and the investigation as well, see if there's a case there as well. So, you know, as we understand the scale of this more, I think the scope of the potential punishments only increases. There's just no in the NBA precedent to go on the only, so outside of the NFL, in the NHL, Shane Pinto was suspended for 41 games this season. But in that case, that was something that Pinto, the NHL, and the NHLPA agreed upon. We never actually got the details, the smoking gun, any confirmation or anything like that. The sides came to an agreement before it got to that point. So again, not much helpful precedent anywhere in this case.
There's obviously a much larger conversation we had about just the promotion of sports gambling, especially now that it's become more and more widespread and not just legalized in many areas, but also become more culturally like acceptable in North America. And obviously places like most of the rest of the world actually had already legalized sports betting to this point. If you watch the Premier League, for example, like half the teams are brought to you by some sort of sports book. But in any case, in North America, and we're seeing this sort of effect take over the NBA quite a bit. You see lots of partnerships. The Raptors have direct partnerships. You know, every team in the league basically is in the same boat here. Is there a larger conversation to be had for you guys? And this is just a personal preference because, you know, I'm not expecting you guys to be experts specific on this, but, you know, of course you guys are, you know, heavily involved in sports and you guys are seen as sports experts on a show like this. Is there a larger conversation to have for you guys in terms of how sports betting is marketed across the board and maybe even the saturation of it across, like, you know, the presentation of sports in North America?
I think definitely in terms of how we converse about it or how we preview games or things like that, you know, when you see people sort of taking the dialogue of a preview for a game or a series or whatever into, you know, under the umbrella of, hey, these are the props and so this is what you should be looking for. Right? I think that takes away from just talking about the game itself. So I think that's what you've always got to keep at the forefront. Mm-hmm. You talk about the game, you talk about the teams, and then, you know, people will make their decisions. And obviously, there's risks involved. You have to evaluate your own financial circumstances with everything that you do. And so I think we, as presenters or, you know, commenters on all of this, we have to be cognizant of that. And, you know, this is not our money that we're playing.
Right. For sure. Yeah.
And so I think that's the main thing that we need to be aware of when we're speaking to the general public. And so being informative about the game, being informative about what we're watching is the main goal. And then let people take away from that whatever they want. Mm.
Yeah, for me personally, I mean, look, like full disclosure, yeah, I have bet on sports my entire life. Like since I first had you know, some disposable income, not a lot of disposable income. I mean, you know, my backstory, not a lot, but like since university, probably I've been betting on sports. And obviously that was not legal for a long time, or you had to go through, you know, back channels or whatever.
Right, make a trip to Vegas type of deal.
Yeah, but I have been doing that. And like, it's naive for me to think that everyone is going to approach sports betting the way I do, which is that make sports a little more fun. I understand the math. I understand that over the long run, even a smart sports person who is number savvy but doesn't have like a machine learning system, like, mm-hmm. like it's a losing proposition over the long run. That's a small part.
The house always wins.
Yeah. And like when I was on the morning show and we do Wake and Rake and things like that, you know, I tried to be very, very clear that, hey, this is like a small part of my personal entertainment budget. I'm not trying to get rich off of it. I'm not trying to make money. I'm trying to, hey, there's a big UFC event tonight. I don't care about these two fighters. Let me have a stake in this, and it makes it a little bit more entertaining. That is how I've always approached sports betting. And that's not, you know, that's not universal, though. And I think that it's naive to think that it would be universally applied and there aren't risks. There's a reason you can't advertise, cigarettes. There's a reason you can't advertise alcohol and things like that. There are big risk here, and I know that a lot of the sports books and the leagues themselves, they try to provide you with the resources if you're having mm-hmm. trouble and things like that. But yeah, obviously, as you introduce more of this stuff, and we just went through it, you know, a handful of years ago with the decriminalization and legalization of marijuana, right? Like some of these same risks were there. So some of the same things had to be, you know, sorted out in the initial years. It's not a perfect example, but as like these things happen. It's sports betting is not the first thing that's dealt with stuff like that. Anyway, yes, the bigger picture conversation, it's really, really unfortunate and scary that JB Bickerstaff is getting death threats or threats about his family, that Tyrese Halliburton is enjoying playing less because all he hears courtside is stuff about prop bets and parlays and stuff like that. You know, this is the reality. I don't know how you walk it back to where like, some of the onus falls on those individuals to be a little bit more reasonable, but I don't know. Like, I don't know how you put the toothpaste back in the tube mm-hmm. at this point if it's going to stay legalized in terms of that, the insidious side of the culture around it. So again, like recognizing that everything has betting sponsors, we have one. I do the pregame hits and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
My personal, and I'm a member of sports media. My personal line has been, well, I don't like other than the morning show. The couple months that I did that, like I'm not giving picks. I'm not talking about the bets. That is for me, like where I have to personally, I feel like I need to draw the line. Other people feel differently. Other outlets feel differently. I know it got pointed out a lot that ESPN ran that story yesterday, the same day or the day after one of their panelists was talking about this is a risk-free investment when it came to a bet on one of the college games, which obviously no bet is a risk-free investment. Anyway, uh-huh. So yeah. There is a lot of irony and yes, to some degree, hypocrisy mm-hmm. to sort through here. I don't have an answer other than that, you know, you'd hope that silver lining to stuff like this in the Shohei thing is that it's a wake-up call to the leagues that they have not, and legislators, I guess, too, that mm-hmm. like, as this is all rolled out, we have not done a good enough job, you know, making sure the messaging and the safeguards are quite in place from the start.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, again, circling back to this, the biggest thing is you cannot lose the credibility and integrity of your sport.
Right.
Like, honestly, this is might just be me being so invested in the Toronto Raptors, but one of my first reactions to the whole news with Jonte potentially, like, taking himself out of games to make sure that they hit the unders is, like, you're sabotaging a Raptors performance. And, like, I get it. It's the lost season. You're the third-string center. It's not the biggest thing. It's not, like, if LeBron would like take himself out of the game, you know what I mean? Like that would have a much bigger impact, but ultimately like the integrity of the sport 100%. Is like the main thing. That's what we're all sort of banking on. That's what we're all, you know, investing to see as a fan. You're trying to see a true competition and you want to see the competition be the most important thing. That's why, you know, for you, like I agree with that approach. It's like, ideally, it's a secondary thing. Everything is secondary to the fact that, you know, there is an integrity of what you're competing with here. And the NBA has to be very, very careful on something like this because they've literally already had scandals
yep.
involving officials.
It took them so long to get past, whether they even got past the Tim Donaghy thing.
For sure.
But, like, anytime there's a bad call in a meaningful spot in a game now, and we've been through this with Raptors, like the game that Darko blew up at the refs or whatever, you know, I had DMs about, like, the league's conspiracy theories and stuff like that.
Of course.
It's like, okay, I don't, like, there were, what was it? Rudy Gobert thought the league, when he got fined $100K.
He did the money sign. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like afterwards it's like, yeah, the league has the fix in for the Sacramento Kings. It's like, okay, well, let's be reasonable about where the fix would be. But anytime this kind of stuff comes, and there's a reason Rudy got slapped with such a big fine, why Darko got fined, why the coaches get fined when they question the, you know, the referees and things like that, is that, yeah, the league has always, on the player and coach side, you know, fiercely protected the integrity of the game. If you suggest otherwise, they came down hard on Tim Donaghy and put more safeguards in place on the referee side and things like that. But that has only, you know, that only applies to like the player and coach side.
Right. But again, the main thing has to be the main thing. Yep. Nothing secondary can jeopardize the main thing. But I think going to the sports media side, and that's not like, you know, again, you've already pointed it out, the fact that like, you know, a lot of sports media sites, ours included, have partnerships with sportsbooks. But the big question for me is like, okay, these are the big sponsors that are actually stepping up and actually bringing money to these enterprises. And the reality of the situation for a lot of shows and a lot of programs on sports is like, that is what's going to fund them going forward. And, you know, when you look at a long-term model, I always look at the EPL, for example, or any sort of soccer leagues, it's like, those are direct partnerships that they've worked with for a very long time. And that actually is just the reality of like where all the chips end up falling is that sportsbooks are a huge part of sports. But again, there needs to be safeguards and safe rails put into place. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of people have a question about, okay, how does advertising like this hit children, for example, right? How does that develop habits in younger players who may not have, again, the wherewithal to be able to do it responsibly? You know what I mean? And of course, there are ideally guardrails in place. And the fact of any society is that you can't protect everybody from the downsides of any potential decision. And, you know, there are obviously facets that come into that. But yeah, in general, though, like, the integrity of the sport must be maintained. And that's why this whole situation is incredibly disappointing. And that's why so many people were talking about it. Again, from a Raptors perspective, I guess you can wonder or not if he's going to be involved. But again, depending on how this like investigation folds, like, I would be very surprised if he played another game for the Toronto Raptors. If
10 games left.
Well, not just that, but like, yeah, I mean, I don't even know about his future in the league. Again, depending on how directly involved he was with some of this stuff. And of course, you can always point to the tangential stuff relating to it. He seems like he's been really big into, let's just say, financially risky decisions.
I mean, we could just say it. Like, he has a history of tweeting about crypto and stock market stuff.
That's circumstantial,
and
man. That's and
it is. Yeah. And like, obviously, if you're, you know, if you like, crypto is a thing you can legally invest in and make money and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, there's nothing, same with the stock market. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, and those are the account that is pretty safely traced back to him. Also, Adam Lascaris did some digging on that. You know, has also engaged with sports betting stuff in the past. But none of that means that you did this necessarily, right?
For
it just means that you've been public about other ways that you look to invest and find, you know, financial opportunities, which doesn't mean you did this.
You guys want to talk Raptors Nets?
Yeah,
Raptors,
we want to take a break first and then come back and do Nets.
Nah, we got like 5 minutes on this. Let's just bang this one out. I want one takeaway from both of you guys on the Raptors losing 96-88 against the Brooklyn Nets.
For me, I mean, getting an opportunity to watch Kobe Simmons, I thought he had some nice minutes. I thought he hustled on the defensive end. I thought, you know, he had that, I mean, he got a screen from Mohamed Ogie and then was able to get downhill against Dennis Schroeder and get that nice runner. He had a pull-up three.
Yep.
And so I thought he had some nice minutes, showed some flashes. So if I were to take one... if I had one takeaway from this game, I'll go with him just because, you know, we've seen most of the other guys plenty.
The big takeaway from the Jontay Porter scandal game is Kobe Simmons. Okay, Blake, yours.
I watched Grady Dick and Ochai Agbaji run a successful pick and pop.
Oh.
Yesterday, which is like Ochai Agbaji hitting an above the break three has been fairly rare. We talked the last week about, you know, Grady doesn't do a ton of operating in the pick and roll right now. You know, that's not something they've asked him to do a ton of. So we got both of those things in one game, in one play. That was the, I mean, this game was ugly.
Oh,
ugly,
it was nasty.
Ugly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it earlier. Both 14, teams.
14 for 66 combined three-point shooting.
Oh man, yeah, it was a tough performance. There's no doubt. But you know, they did compete, and for me, my takeaway was Garrett Temple, Raptors show favorite, continues to be one of the only like guys on the Raptors that like consistently knows what he's doing. And of course, like he should. He's like 37. He's been a long time NBA player. all that kind of stuff. And I even thought back to the interview that we did, and we were like, you know, Garrett, it does feel a little bit like we're patting on the head of like, okay, you can still play well. But it's actually similar to like what we did with Thad too, because when you don't see a guy play for a while and they get into the game, like you don't know what to expect. And but for Garrett, he's come in and actually done a decent job. And of course, it's never some sort of overwhelming thing, right? Like, yeah, 2 points last night, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal. But he just, he plays the right way. He's doing the right things, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. And dare I say, there's a case to be made that he should play even more minutes. If the Raptors, you know, agenda here is to like be as competitive as possible, which obviously at this point we know it's a balance between many things.
I think you could make the case that he should play a little bit more, even if the goal is not to be as competitive as possible. It's just like
he does bring like competent structure.
Similar to how like early in the season, anytime Otto Porter played, even though he didn't do that much, the team played better. It's just like
wow, you didn't like you weren't terrible.
And like obviously when you're trying to compete at the highest levels, the most important thing is having good players, having great players. But when you are at this level and you've lost 11 games in a row, replacing a non-NBA level player with a guy who just like has a floor and can be safe and be competent and like understand the offense, know where to be in defense, like that it's really lowering the bar, but that really does raise your level of play.
Yeah, it's just the trust factor, right? Like when we watch Kelly Olynyk on the floor and he's on the offensive end, you can go to him as a hub. The young guys can rely on him and just move off him and work off him.
Right.
And so I think it's just that trust factor with Garrett Temple that you know what he's going to bring to the table when he comes in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You got a spicy stat or take off of that?
Which does bring me very conveniently. Wow, I can't believe it worked like this. Time now for today's spicy take, or I guess this is a spicy stat, brought to you by new Chunky Spicy Soup. Are you ready to get fired up? This one, honestly, I got to give Blake the props for this one because he suggested it and I really did like it. Raptors in their last three games, obviously have lost the last three. They've lost 11 straight. They've lost by a combined 31 points. As you would expect, pretty much every single Raptor is a minus during this time. There is only one person who was even better than a plus one in the last three games combined. It is Raptor show favorite, Garrett Temple. Garrett Temple is a plus 14 in the last three games where she's played around 45 minutes, which honestly, again, the Raptors have lost all three games. One of them was not particularly close, and he was still a plus in that one. Yeah, he's been a positive contributor in that stretch. My question to you guys, I mean, there's certain guys, the starting lineup obviously has been getting killed. Bruce Brown's a minus 30. Kelly Olynyk's a minus 27. Ochai is a minus 25. You know, things like that. But my question to you guys, who are the other two Raptors who are actually a plus one in this three-game stretch?
Jabyas Ramsey.
That's a good guess, but no. He's a minus two. He was a plus nine in one of the games, and then was a minus 11 in another one.
Damn.
And then obviously he's not on the team yesterday.
What's right?
Jabyas wasn't on
yes.
the team.
Yeah. Yes. Sorry, I thought that was a hint.
No. There's no hints for that.
Over the last three games.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe Simmons.
Kobe Simmons, yes, very good. Plus one last night.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I don't know.
Yeah.
Grady?
No, Grady. Grady's played better. Minus 12.
I know he was a plus last night.
Yeah. He's getting a lot of threes up, which is nice.
Yeah. Who's the other one?
Let's go with Gary.
No, the other one's someone we talked about quite a bit. Jonte Porter.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
This segment got pretty dark once again. Plus one in his 20 minutes. He actually played well in that game.
Well in a lot of games.
Must have not been the prop that one. But in any case, we are going to take this break. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spice Soup. When we come back, let's talk about Gary Trent Jr.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Moen Liu. Continue to be joined by co-host Blake Murphy and guest Vivek Jacob. V, as I mentioned in hour one, or segment one, you have your own Substack, Raptors in 7. Going correct. Straight to my inbox. Tell me about your Substack first and also what you wrote about this week.
With the Substack, I started it a few weeks ago, beginning with a post about Scottie Barnes and a lot of takes about, where he's at in his career, obviously largely positive. But I think with the Substack, I just wanted to have something where I could consistently just write in my own voice and You know, I think with the way media is trending, independent media, I think, is going to be more of a thing. And so I just wanted to, you know, take a bit of a risk with that and see where it lands. And yeah, so for this week's post, it was the 3-year anniversary of the Gary Trent Jr. Norman Powell trade.
Okay.
Yesterday. And so I thought it'd be a good time to kind of look back on that trade, look ahead to free agency, the way Gary Trent Jr. has performed as a Raptor, and kind of figure out maybe, you know, what's the optimal outcome for the Raptors going into this offseason.
Okay. So there's obviously going to be a big question, right? Because, again, this offseason, you got to choose to decide whether you're going to re-sign him or not. He's unrestricted. He had picked up his player option for this season to return to the Raptors. I think that probably does indicate that there wasn't that strong of a market last offseason. I don't think he was coming off the greatest year last year as well. Having said that, though, this year has kind of been difficult to evaluate, not just him, but pretty much every Raptor. But I think especially for Gary, because he started the season coming off with the second unit. I don't think he's ever necessarily looked all that comfortable playing with the second unit for extended stretches. He's gone back into the starting lineup partially because of the function of how much roster turnover. But generally speaking, he's actually been kind of productive recently. He's been leading the team in scoring. So there is a question in terms of, A, just how productive is Gary, and also, like, what the Raptors should do in the offseason, especially in terms of a contract potentially. But, like, what have you made of Gary Trent's season so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know that the Gary Trent's better as a starter thing kind of annoys me, because every role player in the league would be better as a starter, playing around better players and things like that. He also has shot better as a reserve in his career, so the numbers don't even back it up. It just kind of feels that way.
Okay.
Having said that, he has been their most reliable source of offense during this period where everyone's out. Basically, the only guy who can get his own shot, and basically the only guy who can score without Kelly Olynyk spoon-feeding them buckets, which is great. Yeah, sure. And I think in terms of his value, he's had, like, on the market, he's had a down year. His counting stats are down. We didn't see the, you know, playmaking progression maybe you'd like to see. The defense hasn't got back to the level it was the 1 year where he had taken a step forward. Hasn't been as bad as last year, in my estimation, but, you know, things like steals are down and stuff like that. But I think the most important thing for him when it comes to the market is he just turned 25, and he is once again having another really, really good season from three. He's at 40% on threes. We're now looking at a 5-year run here where he's hit at worst 36.9% of his threes on high volume. Over those 5 years, we're talking over 2,000 attempts. He's just shy of 39%. That is the 18th most threes hit in the NBA over the last 5 years. And of those top 20 guys, it's the number 6 percentage. So this is like one of the premier high volume catch and shoot 3-point guys in the league. So if you're talking about what his value is in the open market, a 25-year-old who's a safe bet to hit 39% of his threes on like 6-7 threes a game is a really, like, that's a stable thing. There is a consistency there. That has a lot of value. I think, though, relative to the last time he was a free agent and relative to even if he had opted out this past summer, I don't know that anyone anymore is pricing in further development from him.
Right, no potential.
Even though he's only 25, which is young on the age scale, I think given what we've seen over the last couple of years, given where his game is, he is who he is, and that's fine. That's a really valuable piece given the three-point shooting in the modern NBA. But I think, you know, if he had explored free agency more aggressively when he got that 3-year deal, even this past offseason, some teams might have been like, well, he might develop more. He might get this in his game. What if we expand his role this way? And I don't think you're there anymore. I think his market will be, hey, this is a really steady 3-point shooter, and that's his primary, you know, kind of marketing asset.
Yeah, I do like the fact that, well, number one, I think you do have to appreciate what he's brought as a professional. I think he's you know, been always really good to speak to. I think he's, you know, been available for games, and, you know, even the last couple games, like, I do, at least in these difficult times, in terms of, like, okay, the Raptors are on this extended losing streak. They got a lot of players missing. Like, are you still playing hard? Are you still trying to compete your very best? And I still do see that from Gary. Like, the last 7 games, and this is obviously, you know, where he's been a lot more prominent. But he's averaged, like, 24 points a game, shooting 44% from the field. He's shooting 9 threes a game, hitting 37% of those. That's really good, especially, again, because nobody's really generating these for him anymore. But having said that, though, I do have some questions in terms of, number one, how does he fit with the starting five? Because you do see that the Raptors do have 4 starters locked in. Is he going to be that 5th starter for you? And if not, is he going to be a productive bench player for you? And that's, I know, Vivek, that's something you explored in your piece. So is Gary that 5th starter that fits with this group? And is that something you're comfortable with long-term? Because that's obviously going to determine a huge part of, A, what he's back, and also what he's back for.
Yeah, first off, I think, to your point, he's been an absolute consummate professional, right? And I think he has shown up to work every day. You look at the game, even in Washington, he's dealing with the back stiffness, but he's there for the team. He plays, he gives it his all, and, you know, struggles from three, which shows, you know, with the back struggles, but he's there for the team. And so I think that's something you have to factor in. I think when you look at the fit with the starting group, they've had a plus 10 net rating, that unit with Gary Trent Jr., Jakob Poeltl, Scotty Barnes, Emmanuel Quickly, and RJ Barrett.
That's pretty good.
And so that's encouraging. And the thing that surprises me is they had a defensive rating of around 109, which is comparable to the starting fives of Minnesota and Boston, right? Now, the big difference is that the Raptors starting group, they only played 160 minutes together.
Okay, all right, fair.
And you had those other two teams with over 500 minutes of a sample size. And so you would expect somewhat of a correction, at least, right? But I do think when you think of the theoretical fit with the way Jakob Poeltl plays, with the way Scotty Barnes plays, with the way RJ Barrett attacks the rim, Gary Trent's offensive fit is pretty seamless. And so it's about, you know, what are Jakob Poeltl and Scotty Barnes doing to protect the basket with those other three around that is allowing them to look pretty good defensively or good enough defensively to do what they can offensively. And I think that's where I can see Gary Trent Jr. as a short-term solution. I think if I were to just, you know, think of the prototype I would want next to those four, it would be more of a 3-and-D guy.
Okay.
And it would be someone who is a switchable defender. And that's part of what kind of intrigues me about the likes of an Ochai Agbaji, you know?
I think you're pretty high on Ochai.
I mean, I think his absolute ceiling is being a 3-and-D starter.
Okay.
Right? I think most people would probably say, hey, can he just be a rotation guy? Which might be what he nets out as. But I think if he can really start to knock down the three, then you can see that kind of ceiling. But I think overall, obviously, you think of what you would dream of in this scenario is having like an OG Anunoby.
Yeah, right? Okay. All right.
And
it's going to cost you $40 million. So, you know.
But I think that's what you're looking for at that position, unless RJ Barrett really trends upwards defensively, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I think that can kind of change how you view this. But I think next to Emmanuel Quickly, next to RJ Barrett, you want someone who can be that guy. You look at, you know, the opposing team's best scorer and be like, okay, this is what we got for you.
Okay. Like, how do you evaluate Gary's defense?
Not well.
Okay.
I think he has a real knack for getting into a guy's dribble mm-hmm. and being able to, when he's up in a jersey, poke balls free and create offense the other way off of that, which is a very valuable skill. But I think that sometimes that comes at the expense of more sound defense, keeping a man in front of him. That was a little more acceptable in the Nick Nurse era when OG was around and other guys were there as well, and it was a better defensive ecosystem because there were more guys to cover for that. That scheme prioritized taking those kind of gambles, whether right. at the nail, the elbow extended, even on your man, you know, letting a guy beat you over the screen and trying to poke it free from behind or rear view contest. Like, those were kind of their principles then. In a team scenario like this, where it's a little more conservative, where the defensive talent around him isn't as much. Maybe with Jakob Poeltl healthy, you can get there a little bit with the paint protection. Mm. But those risks are riskier in this environment, and I don't think he's been able to scale that part of his nature back and be more sound. I don't think he's the worst defender in the NBA, but I don't think he's as good as, you know, the fact that he averaged 1.7 steals the 1 year and had trended upward. Like, he's not that level of a guy. He's not that large also. Which, you know, when you're already playing Quickly and RJ at two spots, you'd probably like someone a little bit bigger nominally. So,
but would you want someone to defend the point of attack though? Because I feel like Scotty can be like probably your wing defender, and then you need a guy who can guard the guards. And
sure, but I don't think that's Gary Trent Jr. And okay. I think with what you're about to pay Emmanuel Quickly, he has to become that guy.
Yeah.
And he certainly has not done a great job of that since he's arrived in Toronto. He's a much better team level defender than point of attack defender. Mm-hmm. But that is the challenge for me. Like the way you're about to pay Emmanuel Quickly, he needs to be probably that guy for you.
Like, you can't have someone else do that job.
unless you're committing to playing pretty small, because generally, like, right. I get it. Ochai could be technically your point of attack defender, but I think we've seen he's a little better off against the kind of more wing forward types. Yeah. And also, like, yeah, it's just like, it's got to be, quickly has got to be better in that role, at least to the extent, like he's at least got to get to where they can use him like they used Dennis this year, where against most point guards, he gets that assignment initially, right. and you're not having to retool your deal. If Quigley's going to make $22, $25 million a year, he's going to have to improve as that guy.
Okay. Well, that's a separate question. We'll get to it on a different episode. But I think, okay, so if Gary's going to be your starter, what do you pay him? And if he's going to be your reserve, what do you pay him? Because obviously that's going to have a big impact on what do you decide to do with him. I mean, first off, I guess, do you guys want Gary back for next season, both of you guys?
I think if you can find that salary range between, 12 to 15, I think that's where 12 to 15 million, I think that's where I can see the fit.
Do you think it's easy to sell him on a pay cut?
No, I think there would definitely be a challenge.
He's making 18 right now.
Yeah, but that's where I kind of drew the comparables with players from last season.
Okay.
Last offseason and what they got, right? Like, you look at a Max Strus, he got 4 years, $62
million. Okay.
So
right.
that's just over $15 million a year. And I don't think...
That's fair.
Think
the market is the market. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think people would say that Cary Trent Jr. is a better player than Max Strus.
Yeah. Mid-level projects to be about $13 million. So, maybe you give him a hair, maybe you split the difference between what he's making now and the mid-level. And basically, if he's not game for that, I don't know, obviously these things are very rough metrics, but he grades out to be about a 3 to 3.5 win player. And in basketball, that's worth $11 to $14 million in the current cap environment. You could justify going a little above the mid-level because of the certainty, because he's your guy, he's a culture fit and things like that. Mm-hmm. If he wants the deal he's currently on, certainly if he wants the type of deal that was theorized when he picked up his player option about potential extensions, at that point, I think you have to just tell him, okay, go out and beat the mid-level on the market. If you can beat the mid-level from someone else, we can have that conversation. Mm-hmm. But, the Raptors have at times paid their guys full freight to keep them. There have been a couple times I'm not sure that deal was there somewhere else. Like the Jakob Poeltl deal, I don't know that he had 4 years, $78 million from
someone
else.
He did have the leverage of, you traded the pick for me, so you better re-sign me.
You do. Yeah. And guys, they're last year they were in a bit of what is called the bird rights trap, where if you don't re-sign your guys, you risk them walking for nothing because you're not going to have cap space otherwise. The Raptors at least could get into cap space this offseason, so they have a little bit of leverage in the Gary negotiations if we could use this elsewhere. But yeah, I think that's where you're at. You could go to $15 million, justify paying a premium on the mid-level because he's your guy and you know him well and things like that. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I think you got to tell him, go beat that deal somewhere else.
Exactly.
Right?
And you might, if you're going to spend that much money, you might as well splurge on someone else.
It would be contingent on other players being willing to take that money to come to Toronto for that role. And if there is a replacement, I will be okay. But if there's no replacement and we're just losing Gary over $1 or $2 million, then that's where I'm I'd rather just keep him.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah.
That if it comes down to that, then, you would rather maintain a player on your roster.
Okay.
I think the other point of leverage for the Raptors as well is you've already paid for potential ones. When Gary got the 3-year $51 million deal, he was coming off making $1.6 million the previous year.
Okay, yeah.
And so as a 22-year-old, they gave him a potential deal. And so you look at what he's accomplished in these three seasons, you would not say that he's grown a significant amount.
Right.
In terms of what he is as a player.
If he did show that secondary skill, the defense on a consistent basis, playmaking, all that kind of stuff. And I feel like sometimes it does feel a little unfair because his role is just to finish. So it's not all of a sudden you're where are the assists? The job is to score. But also at the same time, you would feel a lot more comfortable if you had a secondary role. The other question is just, how long is it going to take Grady to get to the point where he's at Gary's level or even better? Because you would not obviously want to block him. But for me personally, if you were to re-up him for another year or two on his, similar to what he's currently making, it doesn't really bother me.
If you go that short, then you can pay the extra.
I think that's ultimately where they're going to end up.
I don't worry that much about blocking. You need more than five good players, even guys coming off the bench. They are at a talent deficit right now. I'm not worried about having too many good players.
Yeah, well, That does it for us today. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, we are at 11 a.m. That's where you'll find the show. Thanks once again to Amit Mon, our board producer, Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Olnick, David Says, Jared Manitat for helping behind the scenes. Thanks to our guest, Vivek Jacob, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.